It took the Nguni herdsmen many days to round up the scattered herds. They discovered that 32 of the great humpbacked beasts had died or been hopelessly maimed in the stampede. Some had fallen over precipices, run into holes, drowned in the rapids of the river, or been killed by the lions when they had become separated from the herd. The Nguni mourned them. Lovingly, they drove back those cattle that had survived the dreadful night. They moved among them, soothing and gentling them. They dressed their injuries, the horn wounds of their piers and the rips and contusions where they had run into trees or other objects. In Kunzi, the head herdsman was determined to express his outrage to Jim in the strongest terms he dared. "I will demand that he suspend the march and rest in this place until all the cattle are recovered," he assured his herders, and they all agreed staunchly with him. Despite his threats, the request, when he made it to Jim, was couched in much milder terms, and Jim agreed with him without quibble. As soon as it was light, Jim and his men rode over the battlefield. They came upon four dead horses of Kurtz's troop, with horn stabs, and two others so badly hurt that they had to be destroyed. However, they retrieved 11 more that were either unhurt or so little injured that they could be treated and added to Jim's own remount herd. They also found the corpses of 5 of Kurtz's men. The features of 3 were so battered as to be unrecognizable, but from items of their clothing and equipment and the paybooks Jim found in the pockets of 2, he could be certain that they were VOC cavalrymen, wearing mufti rather than military uniform. "These are all Kayser's men. Although he did not come after us himself, Kayser sent them," Jim assured Louisa. Small Boy and Muntu recognized some of the corpses. The Cape Colony was a small community where everyone knew his neighbours.
"Khofu, now there was a truly bad girl," said Small Boy, as he prodded one of the battered corpses with his toe.
His expression was stern, and he shook his head. Small Boy himself was no angel of purity. And if he had disapproved, thought Jim, Khofu must have been a veritable tower of vice.
"There are still 5 missing," Buckart told Jim. "No sign yet of Kurtz and the bald sergeant, or of the 3 strange Arabs we saw with them yesterday. I must cast the far side of the river."
He waded across, and Jim watched him scurry along the bank and peer at the ground as he read sign. Suddenly he stopped, like a pointer dog getting the scent of the bird.
"Buckart, what have you found there?" Jim yelled across.
3 horses running hard," Buckart called back.
Jim, Louisa, and Zama crossed the river to join him, and they studied the tracks of the galloping horses.
"Can you read who the riders were, Buckart?" Jim asked.
It seemed impossible, but Buckart responded to the question as though it were commonplace. He squatted by the tracks.
"These 2 are the horses that Kurtz and the bald one was riding yesterday. The other is one of the Arabs, the one with the green turban," he declared with finality.
"How can you tell?" Louisa asked with wonder. "They are all steel-shod horses. Surely the tracks are identical."
"Not to Buckart," Jim assured her. "He can tell from the uneven wear of the horseshoes and dents and chips in the metal. To his eye, each horse has a distinctive gait, and he can read it in the spoor."
"So, Kurtz and Uderman have got away. What are you going to do now, Jim? Are you going to follow them?"
Jim did not reply at once. To delay the decision, he ordered Buckart to follow the spoor and make sure of the run of it. After a mile, the tracks turned determinedly towards the north. Jim ordered a halt and asked Buckart and Zama for their opinion. It was a long debate.
"They are riding fast," Buckart pointed out. "They have a start of almost 1/2 a night and a day. It will take many days to catch them. If you ever do, let them go, Samoya."
"I think they are beaten," Zama said. "Kurtz will not come back. But if you catch him, he will fight like a leopard in a trap. You will lose men."
Louisa thought about that. Jim might be one of those wounded or killed. She thought of intervening, but she knew that might harden Jim's resolve. She had found a wide streak of contrariness in his nature. She bit back her pleas to make him stay and instead said quietly,
"If you go after him, I shall go with you."
Jim looked at her.
The warlike gleam in his eye faded, and he smiled in defeat. But it was still a conditional surrender.
I have a feeling that Buckart is right, as usual. Kurtz has abandoned his hostile intentions towards us, for the present at least. Most of his men have been wiped out, but he still has a formidable force with him. There are five still unaccounted for, Kurtz, Odermann, and the three Arabs. They could make a bitter fight of it if we cornered them. Zama's also right. We can't hope to get away scot-free a second time. If we do catch up with them, some of our people will be killed or hurt. On the other hand, what seems to be flight might be a trick to draw us away from the wagons. We know Kurtz is a crafty animal. If we follow, Kurtz might circle round and attack the wagons before we can get back to intervene.
He drew breath and conceded. We will keep on for the coast and see what we find at Nativity Bay.
They crossed the river and headed back down the narrow gut of the gorge along the path of the cattle stampede. Now that she knew Jim would not ride off after Kurtz, Louisa was happy and chatted easily as they rode side by side. Zama was anxious to return to the wagons, and he drew steadily ahead until he was almost obscured by the trees.
"In a hurry to get back to the lovely Lily,"
Louisa laughed.
"Who?"
Jim was puzzled.
"Intepi." "Tegwani's granddaughter? Is Zama—"
"Yes, he is," Louisa confirmed.
"Ah, sometimes men are blind.
How could you not have noticed?"
"You are the only thing in my eye, Hedgehog. I see nothing but you."
"My love, that was sneakily said." Louisa leaned out of the saddle and offered her mouth.
"You shall have a kiss as a reward."
But before he could claim it, there was a wild shout and the crash of a musket shot ahead. They saw Frost rear and shy under Zama as he reeled in the saddle.
"Zama's in trouble," Jim shouted, and spurred forward.
As he caught up, he saw that Zama was wounded. He was hanging half out of the saddle, and blood was shining at the back of his coat. Before Jim could reach him, he keeled over and fell to earth in a limp heap.
"Zama!" Jim shouted, and rode for him.
But at that moment he saw a flash of movement to one side. There was danger there, and Jim turned drumfire to meet it. One of the Arabs, in a ragged robe stained with dirt and dried blood, was crouched behind the trunk of a fever tree. He was frantically reloading his long-barreled musket, ramrodding a ball down the muzzle. He looked up as horse and rider charged down on him.
Jim recognized him.
"Rashud!" he shouted.
He was one of the crewmen from the family schooner, Gift of Allah. Jim had sailed with him more than once and knew him well. Yet here he was, riding with a company of the enemy, treacherously attacking the Courtney wagons, and he had shot Zama.
At the same moment, Rashud recognized Jim.
He dropped the musket, sprang to his feet, and ran. Jim unsheathed his cutlass and steered drumfire after him. When he realized he could not escape, Rashud dropped to his knees and spread his arms in a gesture of surrender.
Jim rose over him in the stirrups. "You treacherous, murderous bastard!"
He was angry enough to use the edge and split the man's skull, but at the last moment he controlled himself and swung the flat of the blade across Rashud's temple. The steel cracked against the bone with such force that Jim feared he might have killed him anyway. Rashud collapsed face forward onto the earth.
"Don't you dare die," Jim threatened him, as he swung down from the saddle. "Not until you've answered my questions. Then I'll give you a royal send-off."
Louisa rode up, and Jim shouted,
"See to Zama? I think he is hard hit. I will come to you as soon as I have the swine secured."